February the 2nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 6, Packaging, Labeling, and Advertising of Honey, repeal. Ayes 59, absent 1. House Bill 66, Water Development Projects Funding. Ayes 59, absent 1. House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials. Ayes 59, absent 1. House Bill number 123, Circuit Court Surety Bonds Repeal. Ayes 59, absent 1. House Bill 140, Government Immunity Public Transportation. Ayes 53, no 6, absent 1. House Bill number 141, Governmental Immunity Waiver of Hospital Employees. Ayes 33, noes 27. February the 2nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 85, Teacher Suspension, Substitute Bill number 1. Ayes 57, noes 2, absent 1. House Bill 114, Insurance Premiums Failure to Pay. Ayes 57, noes 2, absent 1. House Bill 145, Vehicle Registration Timing. Ayes 57, noes 2, absent 1. House Bill 146, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax. Ayes 56, noes 3, absent 1. House Bill 167, Castle Doctrine Modifications. Ayes 58, noes 1, absent 1. And House Bill number 177, Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day. Ayes 59, absent 1. February the 2nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bills listed below failed to pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 82, Unfair Employment Practices. Ayes 30, noes 30. House Bill 186, Wyoming Lottery. Ayes 27, noes 17. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 107, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials, an act relating to jury trials in municipal court, sponsored by Representative Botten. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 59, absent 1.
House Bill 107 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 123, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 123, Circuit Court Surety Bonds Repeal, an act relating to circuit court, sponsored by Representative Throne. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 59, absent 1.
House Bill 123 has been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 140, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 140, Governmental Immunity Public Transportation, an act relating to governmental claims, sponsored by Representative Roscoe. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 53, noes 6.
Wait a minute. An absent 1.
House Bill 140 has been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 141.
House Bill number 141, Governmental Immunity Waiver of Hospital Employees, an act relating to governmental immunity, sponsored by Representative Conley, passed the House on third reading, ayes 33, noes 24. 27.
House Bill 141, signed to Committee number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 6, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 6, Packaging, Labeling, and Advertising of Honey, Repeal, an act relating to agriculture, sponsored by the Agricultural Committee. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, absent 1.
House Bill 6 has been assigned to Committee number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 66, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 66, Water Development Projects Funding, an act relating to water development, sponsored by the Water Committee. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, absent 1.
House Bill 66 has been assigned to Committee number 5, Agriculture. Reports from standing committees.
February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 49, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Nutting, and Scott. No, Senators Martin and Schiffer, Senator Scott Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 153, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Jennings, Landon, Ruffus. No, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 29, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 140, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Landon, Ruffus, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Perkins, would you like to come back to the desk, please?
Okay. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 113. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 113, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revision, sponsored by Senator Johnson.
Sure, we can just get into Kathy.
It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 113, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask it be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 113, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 12, line 2.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 13, and with your indulgence, I'd like to...
Excuse me, Senator Case, it's 113, but I think you said 13, but just for the record.
I apologize for that, but it definitely is Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to 113, and with the indulgence, Chair, I'd like to read this bill word for word into the record. I think that's...
I think that motion's... No, we're not going to do that. But anyway, if you have a shorter record, you have the Reader's Digest version.
I have a shorter idea. And to defer to the bill's sponsor, Senator Johnson, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Bill, I call a question. Mr. Chairman, I... must apologize. I would apologize for bringing another very long bill, but in my 19 years in the legislature, I've done two long bills, and they've both been quite recently. I prefer six-page bills because two-page bills get killed, and six-page bills usually pass. This is not something that you've seen before on the floor of the Senate, and that's because the Senate Corporations Committee has been killing this bill for the last several years. There was always an attempt to do some really serious fencing with this bill, especially on surveyors, and there's a subculture in that committee that just does not like fencing at all. And finally, they got the message that if they take the fencing out, it'll pass, and as you heard, all five of us voted aye on this. So this is a very old friend of ours. We've been through it many, many, many times, and we're well acquainted with it. This is another revisions bill. It revises the current statutes for the Wyoming Board of Registration for Professional Engineers and Professional Land Supporters. Their statutes were last modified and revised in 1987, and with the advances made then, they're long since out of date. The bill is long because they're attempting to update language to match as closely as possible the National Council of Examiners for Engineering and Surveying Model Law, but their priority is maintaining important Wyoming-specific provisions. In most cases, the change in language is not a change in requirements, but the major modifications are as follows. First, they're moving the examination board from the state engineer's office to A&I, where all the rest of the licensing boards are. The state engineer's on the board, and it's just felt with that being in his office that there might be an appearance that he has control over it, although he doesn't. Now, this will not cost A&I anything. It will be no increase, no budget, because the engineers fully fund their this board out of their fees for their license. It also removes discipline-specific engineering licensure. Now, you license as a civil engineer, an electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and all around the country, that's no longer felt necessary. You just get licensed as a professional engineer. It includes additional pathways for the licensure of surveyors. There's a four-year degree in surveying, a four-year degree relating to surveying and engineering. If you have a four-year degree and want to do the qualifications and the degree has nothing to do with surveying, you can do that. And you can get a two-year degree in surveying that has at least 30 hours and then do the practicum and become a licensed surveyor. The two-year degree for surveying licensure will be maintained as currently written, and there is no longer a sunsetting provision in it, and they have promised not to try to put one in. They've added size AAA maps as an acceptable map size, 11 by 17. It's a routine map size used in the construction industry, and right now it's not recognized, so they've asked for it. The board members go from 7 to 9. One will be an additional surveyor position, the other one engineering. Throughout the bill, they change references from registrant or registration to licensee and licensure. My other long bill reflected that also. It's the national trend because they're licensed engineers. They are not registered engineers, and they would like that shown. The board will also have the ability to allow for engineering or surveying licensure of international candidates, comedy applicants who have at least 20 years of discipline-free practice, and candidates who have earned a doctorate degree in engineering or land surveying. And to evolve with the times, the board seeks the ability to at least review and license, if applicable, candidates from other countries. Well, but they've got to have significant and appropriate domestic experience, and their current statutory model does not address this. This is opening it up for people from other places. Employees of the state of Wyoming, like those of federal government, would be exempt from licensure under the proposed bill. This would only apply for those employees operating within the scope and authority of their employment with the state of Wyoming. Of course, that would be DQ, Highway Department, and anybody else that has an engineer whose work is used in-house. Boy, I went through that pretty fast. The bill does not affect exemptions for industrial employees working for their employer as long as the workers are not preparing submittals for the public record. The exemption is the current law and is maintained in the proposed bill. Employees of companies regulated by the Public Service Commission are exempt while performing within the scope and authority of their employment. This exemption is also in current law, and it does not affect the need for a Wyoming-specific surveying examination. Now, at this point, if I can find it, I can speak to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. As you can see when you look at it, most of it is registered to licensed and registration over to licensure. We have deleting business entities and inserting firms because there's a definition on page 4 of firm, and there's no definition in this statute of business entity. Okay, page 46, after line 18, insert an officer of the practicing. Okay.
Could you repeat that?
Did I wake you up? I'm so sorry. I apologize so much. I'll try not to do it again. Okay, an officer employee of the state of Wyoming practicing within the scope of his authority and employment, except when filing water rights or water right petitions with the state of Wyoming, is exempt. And then down to line 17 on page 2 is, originally, in the bill as written, they did not carry over the exemption for a utility company or telecommunications company regulated by the Wyoming Public Service Commission. So that's in current statute, and this amendment makes sure that it will be in the new statute if it is so passed. Now, Mr. Chairman, I just broke my record on the 63-page bill, and I hope there are no questions.
Or on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 113, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment, that motion has been approved. We're back on the bill. Is there further discussion on the bill? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'd kind of like to compliment all the participants that worked towards this bill. The Engineers Licensure Board came to us during the interim and just made a presentation and kind of ran up a straw balloon and said, or straw man, and said, you know, we're willing to work with you this time. We really want to get this through. And the essence, the biggest thing that we had a bit of a problem with was the fact that they were wanted to have the only path to being a surveyor would be a 4-year degree licensed surveyor. And in current Wyoming law, I've maintained the possibility with a 2-year degree, And the board agreed to do that. And so there is the two-year path, which will set Wyoming out from being from other states, and that may possibly affect reciprocity a little bit going for Wyoming people going out, but only if you've had the two-year path. Mr. Chairman, there was also folks that came to the committee. They raised some objections. We set the board off with the people that raised the objections. They all sat down. That was the subject of the amendment. At the end, nobody testified against the bill, which is the first time that that's happened in the three or four times that this bill has been through and we've killed it. So I can represent to you that it seems to be that we've achieved something. And truly moving it over from the state engineer's office, that's kind of a relic of statehood almost. And to put it in with the other boards and commissions, that's mostly what the language does. And I too would join with the senator from Laramie County to ask for your favorable consideration.
Thanks, Senator Case. Further discussion? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion with the committee of the whole rises to report that it is with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 113, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion has passed. We're on to the next Senate file for our consideration, Senate File 118. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 118, Career and Technical Training Grants, and Act Relating to Labor and Employment, sponsored by Senator Hastert. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Martin, Schiffer, and Scott. No, Senator Dockstader, excuse, Senator Nunning. Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladren. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Thank you. For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 118 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment from Committee Number 10. Mr. Chairman, I think it would be better if we had an explanation of the Senate file before we went to the Committee Number 2 amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of this old friend, and I call it an old friend because it has passed the Senate before, and we're trying to see if we can get the whole legislature to get it right this time. But for an explanation of this old friend, I yield to Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being Senate File 118, the Career and Technical Training Grants. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, with a workforce shortage in Wyoming and the need for Wyoming to compete in a world market, Wyoming needs a well-trained workforce. The influx of new industries in Wyoming and the need for a well-trained workforce is vital. Industry not only needs a well-trained workforce, but also requires a trained workforce to construct these projects, and this legislation will help play a crucial role. The bill will focus on providing all Wyoming residents that desire the training with the initial skills needed to enter a high-wage, high-demand occupation with an industry that's demonstrated a need in Wyoming and require a commitment of the individual to work in Wyoming for a time frame based on the grant award. The program will cover certification, apprentices, career and technical training that meet industry needs, customizes the training to fill industry needs, and sets a minimum standard to enter the program. The bill incorporates Hathaway components, but was deliberately kept separate from Hathaway, as his workforce development tool has payback for provisions. This program differs from Workforce Development Fund because the Development Fund is not a long-term or certificate program. Workforce Development focuses on the need of an individual business, is designed as a skill upgrade, and is not initial skill development. And there's a business match of 40%, and there's not an individual payback provision with Workforce Development. Educational requirements are in the bill. The work keys is an approved testing component under the Hathaway Scholarship Program. The work keys assessment measures real-world skills, thus is applicable in testing individuals at any point in their life. The three work keys tests of importance to this initiative are applied math, locating information, and reading for information. Tests are scored from the level of 3 to a level of 7. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate, then there's also the commitment to work. An individual would commit to work in the state for a period to be based on the level of scholarship they receive. If they are unable to keep that commitment, the individual will be responsible for full repayment of the scholarship. And should a scholarship recipient fail to complete a semester, they would be responsible for repayment of funds. And we get into eligible timetables and GPA requirements for satisfactory progression, or, you know, that you've graduated from a Wyoming, or from that you graduated from high school or have a GED equivalent. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, the Department of Workforce Services has a study that shows that 75% of the jobs in the state of Wyoming will be of the career and technical nature. We have, as we have all seen with the supercomputer coming in and other things that are happening, the need for a trained workforce is essential. And this, Mr. Chairman, is a mechanism to help get a trained workforce, keep the youth in Wyoming, and then also safeguards and provisions in not duplicating services that industry already provides. Mr. Chairman, you know, just kind of going through the bill, on page 2, we, in section A there, we talk about who's an approved provider. And there's, you know, several listed there. You know, and really, Mr. Chairman, the target is getting individuals into community colleges and to the university. We talk about what career and technical training means. And then on page 3, we got a career readiness score and what that means in taking that test. It talks about what I had mentioned about reading for information, applied mathematics. And then on page 4, we get into the department shall establish the rules and then the purpose of the career and technical training grant program to provide technical training grants to develop and enhance skills of Wyoming's workforce. And then, Mr. Chairman, the authority in C to provide the grants. And then in D, we provide that the department may receive donations from foundations or other private sources. And talked about on these funds, any of these funds shall be deposited into a separate account and are continuously appropriated. So we have a mechanism if industry or if private individuals want to donate into the program. So it continues to grow without necessarily having state funds. And then on page 5, we spell out that we won't pay for a program that's specific to a company if industry or company is already providing these kind of training or these kind of resources. This isn't to duplicate or to replace those types of things. We get into the career and tech on the bottom of page 5, the eligibility for career and technical training grants. Talks about that you have to be a fact that you have to be a U.S. citizen. And then the qualifications that you graduated from high school, obtained a GED, baseline career readiness score and B, and then the time limit on the bottom there that no person shall be eligible for more than equivalent of 2 years and for a period of 4 years. We had some discussion about the department will have rules and regulations establishing exceptions for military service, religious service, and other good causes shown. And then again, talks about the citizen requirements and some of the if you know, if you're not eligible for the program, if you have not complied with selective service in default of a education loan, and then owes a refund, you know, for other financial aid, is incarcerated and is not eligible to hold a license or otherwise disqualified in the occupation for which the training is sought, and then has been a recipient of more than two semesters of the Hathaway during the five-year period before the training date, or does not otherwise qualify under this article for the grant. And it's on page 9, it talks about the department will pay the cost of eligible applicants' initial career readiness tests, and that any other subsequent test would be paid for at the applicant's own expense. And then we get into if the repayment and breach of contract in section 2714104 on the bottom of 9, and then continued on page 10, and then requiring a legislative report, and then, of course, the appropriation on page 11, and then on 12, the appropriation to basically get the program up and running. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that's, you know, we're basically what we're trying to do is get the non-traditional students, get them an avenue, an ability to further their careers, or I guess actually, if they're in a situation where they aren't in a good situation and want to get into a better job kind of thing, that, you know, the state will help pay for that. So it helps the individual, it helps the industry, it helps attract industry, it helps keep people in Wyoming, and certainly is a way women can get into non-traditional kind of employment. And Mr. Chairman, the important part is too is that we get something back on this, is that, you know, that we keep these people in the state of Wyoming. It's not that we're training people to go somewhere else. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically the bill, and I didn't know how you wanted to handle the amendment from the Appropriations Committee.
I think we have someone who will help us with that in just a moment.
Probably.
Thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 be read in.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 118, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 11, line 7.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118. Ladies and gentlemen, when your Appropriations Committee took a look at this program, it's a brand-new program. After listening to it, it's our assessment that if you approve the bill, that we ought to begin at a slow rate, and we cut the appropriation down to $500,000 from the original request of $2 million. We also recommended in the appropriation clause that any grants be limited to $1,600 per year, which would be the lower end of the Hathaway support level. I think it would be our recommendation that as we move this bill through, if it has the support, that we look at what is the level of support. We're a little concerned that if you put $2 million out there, and then the question is, what's the level of support? Seems to us that it ought to be at or below the lower end of the Hathaway, the lowest end of the Hathaway support. So that's the purpose for the $1,600 per cap there. So I would urge your support of this amendment. It goes a little bit slower, puts a cap on it, and as we want to work the bill, I think these are concepts that should be worked in. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. We are on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Ready for the question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has been approved. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that to do so the favorable recommendation on Senate File 118, say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate 118 has passed. Our next bill for our consideration is Senate File 131. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 131, Military Department, Federally Funded Positions, an Act Relating to the Military Department, sponsored by Senator Schiffer. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladern. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Thank you. Per the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, I move for the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 131. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is explain a little bit of where this bill comes from. Mr. Chairman, we have in the Adjutant General, there's a number of different types of positions. The Adjutant General himself, the guy with the most stars of anybody, is a state employee appointed by the governor. From there on down, it's a mix of state employees and federal employees, depending on what their function is and what their job is in the branch of service. When guardsmen get called up, If it's the federal government that calls them up, then the federal government puts the bill for them. For example, the recent deployment to the Near East, that was a federal deployment, and so the Washington pays for it. Other one we saw last summer, where they called some guard members up for flooding over in Fremont County. When the governor calls them up, the governor pays for them. This bill goes into that the cadre of staff people that are full-time employees of the Guard, be it Air Guard or Army Guard, that are they're state employees. In other words, they count when we start totaling how many state employees we have. They are also fully federally funded. In other words, that the federal government pays 100% of their salary and support monies, that's all federally funded. Mr. Chairman, this whole business started prior to World War I. Up until that time, the State Guard was just a militia, totally state-run, state-funded, the whole bit. It's noteworthy that As people that in those days started looking at World War I was on the horizon, and they started converting the Guard over as a training, as a resource for the regular Army. It developed further as time has passed since then, where it's now the mix that we see today. One of the problems we have is and I'm going to focus in on what exactly these positions are. They can be almost anything. They're designated what their job is. They can be custodians. They can be air controllers. They can be firefighters. They can be just depending what their federal position is. What we're really talking about right now are basically firefighters. I think it's about 4 years ago, the Air Force stationed an additional 4 C-130s here at the air base, hopefully they're at the airport. If they land on the base, we'll need our firefighters. That's no question about it. They're at the airport, I'm pretty sure. Those are the big pot-bellied planes with lots of engines and carry a lot of stuff. But when they added the 4, that and those crews rotate in and out, They're deployed doing the stuff they do, whether it's firefighting in California or transferring troops to wherever they got to go. They do a number. It's a very versatile, heavy-duty transport. But when you base them here, they've got to practice landing and taking off and doing all the stuff they do. It takes support crew. Those are state employees, 100% federally funded. That's what they are. Out at Camp Guernsey, same thing. We need some, I don't know what all, but the main ones, again, are firefighters. Mr. Chairman, out at Camp Guernsey, let me give a couple examples of what they can do out there. They have one of the firing ranges is to practice convoys, and they can use live ammunition. To use the live ammunition, you got to have firefighters. You got to have, I think they call them spotters, but they look and see where the shells went to, I guess. I don't know what to do, but you need them. If you don't have those people on board, you can't use that range. You can't train people to do that. Mr. Chairman, the Wyoming Guard just completed the largest deployment in our history. We had no casualties. When I say no casualties, we didn't even have, the car wrecks, or not car wrecks, but truck wrecks and, all the things that can happen when you get people in that situation. Part of the reason for that is training. And training over and over so everybody knows their job and how to do it right. One of the other ranges up at Guernsey is the sniper range. Particularly the Marine Corps uses that for their force recon guys and those sort of people. Again, if we don't have the personnel to run the range, you can't use it. We can get those units in. They can use it for training, but we got to supply the people. The problem came that is how to get those people on board. So what this bill does, it goes into the duties of the Adjutant General, and I'm on page 2, this is where the nuts and bolts is. If the authority is specifically granted by the legislature in its biennial budget, he, being the Adjutant General, may hire a person to occupy a new or existing position of state employment within the military and so forth. When funds are received, which reimburse the state of Wyoming for 100% of the cost of the position. That's what we're talking about. Got to be a 100%. If the federal funding is either cut or unavailable at the 100% level, then they have to fire that person. It's gone. We've seen in the past where the federal government often funds it at 100% to start with, and then a year or so later they say, well, it's hard times here on the Potomac. We're going to just pay 75% of it. And, it's 1-4 match, and so we get suckered in. This says you can't do that. It's got to be 100% or they're out of here. What the specific, if the specifically granted authority, I would suggest to you that takes a budget footnote to the appropriations bill for the Adjutant General, that they can authorize him these positions specifically. My assumption is they'll cite this piece of statute. It says it's got to be 100% or they're gone. The other side of the coin is this specific legislation, sometimes it's hard to hire and fire, particularly fire people. This says they will be fired. That's the end of it. It solves that little dilemma for all concerned. I believe it solves the problem. I believe it does it in a way that we can still. Oh, and I'm sure it requires a report. If it doesn't, we'll amend it in on third reading. Let's report it to somebody somewhere. But we can monitor it. We can maintain the excellent level of training, and we can do it in a fiscally responsible manner. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Sir, discussion on Senate File 131. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it is with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 131, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Senate File 131 is passed committee of the whole. The next Senate file for our consideration, Senate File 135. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 135, University of Wyoming, Federal Mineral Royalties, an act relating to public funds. Sponsored by Senator Nicholas. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of due pass for Senate File 135. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it updates the statute that relates to the earmarked federal mineral royalties that go to the University of Wyoming. The act has not been updated since we've adopted the block grant. The original act contemplated that there would be a budget line item for these federal mineral royalties. With the block grant, that does not happen, principally because the block grant is used to secure their bonded indebtedness. They use it to pay off some of their facilities dollars. And those are the things that are on the university side of the budget. They're not on the general fund side of the budget. And it wouldn't make sense for us to have a line item for federal mineral royalties for things that we simply don't watch. So these monies go into their budget and are accounted for there. We do provide that in this language, we essentially say, all right, don't put it in your budget, but we do want an annual report with respect to what the resources are doing, what the expenditures are from this paragraph, and that you'll find on page 2. So we also require that the funds can only be utilized or spent in accordance with for capital dollars on those items that are authorized by the legislature. So we're not going to allow them to go out and build new buildings and pledge their federal mineral royalties unless they come to the legislature first to get authorization. So we've clarified those issues. But all this does is adopt the current practice into statute, and whereas the old statute was really not being followed. I'd ask for your support. Is there an amendment?
Yes, sir. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senator Nicholas. How would you like to handle that?
All right. If you'd have it read in, please.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 135, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 14.
Thank you. Senator Nicholas?
I'm sure it's a good amendment because it came from Committee Number 1. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 135. And what this does is require that report that I just described to the Joint Appropriations Committee to also be provided to the CAF Finance and Investments Committee. The purpose for that is because they're the ones that are reviewing these buildings, and they ought to know what's happening to this bonded indebtedness. So I'd ask for your support of the amendment and call for the question.
Discussion on Senate File, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to vote in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question to be sure I understand this. I understand the changes on page 2 of the language authorized by the legislature. The question I have is on page 3 where it says, payments from this revenue shall be made by the straight treasurer only for expenditures approved by the trustees. So as I understand it, They can have the authority to do without having to do with us, but we have had to approve it before. Is that correct?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes and no. Yes, to the extent that they use these dollars to pledge or to purchase facilities, buildings. Those buildings cannot be constructed unless they've got specific authority from us. if they want to use their FMRs to fund their block grant operations, they're free to do that without our consent. That just goes into their budget. So these are part of their budgetary dollars. The reason why they're special to the university is for bonding is because since federal mineral royalties are not tax dollars, they can be pledged without voting, things all that, and without debt limits. So the university generally identifies their FMRs separately to allow them to be pledged for the repayment of facilities that we authorize. Recognizing they use it for facilities, a facility has to have approval. If they chose not to build any facilities, they could take their FMRs and put it in their operating budget and without having to come to us. That would be on the trustee side of the budget.
Thanks, Senator Nicholas. Senator Bebout, follow up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if they were to do an expansion or an addition to a building, would that be something the legislature would be involved in, or would they just then redirect the FMRs and take a building of 100,000 square feet and add 50,000 square foot to it? Would they be able to do that?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, the answer is if they need to incur capital expenditures other than their major maintenance, they would have to come to us for an appropriation. Having said that, if they took all their major maintenance and wanted to go out and add on to a building, something that would not require bonding, something that would not require further appropriation within their budget, they do have a little bit of flexibility on their own budget to do capital items. I mean, if you will go over the campus, you'll see that there are property acquisitions, there are smaller remodelings and significant expenditures that occur that are off budget. But with respect to these dollars, if they're going to use these dollars for those, they're going to have to get our approval. I know it's a shady question or a shady answer, and let me see if I can do a better job of it. To the extent that they want to pledge these dollars, they have to give us for something that's larger than the annual revenues. They have to get our approval. But they do use these dollars for other things within their budget that are just on their side of the budget. The university does engage in small projects with their major maintenance dollars and with some of their budgets that don't come through the legislature. I would see no reason why if in a given year all their FMRs weren't used, they could use them to augment those other projects. But as a practical matter, anything that's large has to come through us because their operating budget is already utilized. But I'm aware of smaller projects that are remodels that occur in their budget generally with major maintenance. And they could use this for major maintenance, I think. They don't, but they could.
Thank you for the discussion. Are you ready for the question? All in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 135, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Senate File 135 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 147.
Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees, an act relating to county sheriffs, sponsored by Senator Dockstader. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees. There are no standing committee amendments, and for an explanation of this bill is somebody that's apparently been in trouble with the law a lot, the good representative from the Star Valley.
Thank you, Senator Case, for the introduction and those accusations. Senator Dockstader, you have a defense.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill originated when a former deputy, now a county commissioner, came to me and he said often in his experience he's made several attempts with service of process. and consequently the expenses associated with that service often surpass the fee. And so he asked me to look into it and make a change, and that's what we've done here, Body. The fee is to be determined and set biannually by the County Commission following a public hearing. Now, in the past, the fee was set not to exceed $35 for the first three attempts at different times on different dates. The change calls for that fee to now be $50. In the past, a subsequent fee of $5 was charged for each succeeding attempt. The change calls for $10 for each succeeding attempt. Fees may be waived for indigency. Fees will be directed through the county treasurer and credited to the county general fund. Sheriff has the option of requesting the fees in advance, and specifically, members of the Senate, the change is noted on page 2 of the bill, line 2, go 35 to 50, and on 5, line 5, $5 to $10. And please note again that this is to be determined by the Board of County Commissioners after a public hearing, not to exceed that amount. Ask for your favorable approval.
Thanks, Senator Dockstader. Are there discussion or questions on 147? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion with the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 147. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 147 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, what now? Now give us a second. I think we may have some more homework to do, gentlemen. And lady.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate stand at ease to the sound of the gavel for about 5 minutes.
Thank you. We've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Mr. Majority Floor Leader? Are we ready to go? Are you ready? Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 114. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 114, Teacher Evaluations, an act relating to school districts, sponsored by Senator Peterson. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Landon, Ruffus, and no, Senator Ruffus, Senator Cole, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern. No, Senator Hastert, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 114. I defer to the sponsor of the bill, Senator Peterson.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow Senator, I bring you Senate File 114, and there are some amendments. If we wanted to address those now, Mr. Chairman, we can go ahead and do that. Is it on?
It says you're on. Are you on?
Okay, yeah.
Sure. Which amendment you would like to take first? Number one?
Let's take number one,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 8.
I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Mr. Chairman, and this is considered a friendly amendment, and I think it added to the bill. I think it clarified some things, and I would ask for the body's favorable consideration on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 114.
We're on the Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there a discussion? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to approve Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion passes. We're back on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next amendment is Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 114. This is from the Committee Number 2, Appropriations. And basically what they did, fellow senators, was basically change the general fund to the school foundation account. And, again, that's a friendly amendment, and I'd urge the body's favorable consideration on this amendment.
Senator Peterson, we need to move the amendment.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 114.
Thank you. We're on Amendment Number 2. We need to read it in also. You're a little too quick.
Senate File 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 11.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 114.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. We're on Amendment Number 2. Senator Schiffer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, now we're talking about the money for this. And I'm trying to figure out the grants that they're going to give, is that to put the cameras in the classroom or in the, and we'll talk about later on, I'm sure, where these cameras are going to go. But I'm trying to figure out, what's the money for? If it's to refurbish classrooms or rooms in a school, that's one fund. If this designates it the common school, that's instructional only, I think. So somebody tell me what this money's going to be used for.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The money was allocated for the purchase of the cameras, the recorders, the installation, and the Department of Education to implement this pilot project. So that's what the money was dedicated for.
Thanks, Senator Peterson. We're on amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Senator Schiffer.
Again, as I recall, the Department of education. That's funded out of the common school account. Construction and maintenance is not funded out of the common school account, as I recall. And so I'm trying to figure out what the mix is, how much of the, what is it, how much you got in here? It's a bunch, I know that. Pretty near $250,000. What's the split on that?
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $210,000 was an estimate, as I had checked into the purchasing price of the cameras that would be utilized with the sound and the video, the recorders for each of the buildings within a school district, elementary, middle school, high school. We're talking about different sizes of districts with multiple buildings. That was considered, and the installation, the 50% fee to install, and so these cameras are a critical portion of the bill as far as the evaluation process is concerned. And so that's hopefully that answers the question.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to approve Standing Committee Amendment 2 to Senate File 114, say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion passes. We're back on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow Senators, Senate File 114 has been and I hesitate to mention this because of what you might think, but Senate File 114 has been a brainchild of mine for about the last 4 years. As we've come down repeatedly in this legislative body, we've talked about accountability in our school districts. We've talked about our test scores, our impatience to see the improvement. And as I thought about accountability, I took back a concept of mine and discussed this concept with teachers, present teachers, retired teachers, school administrators, retired school administrators, everybody I could that would listen to me. I tried to discuss this concept with them, this pilot program. The intent of this pilot program is to bring accountability to the spectrum of everyone that is involved in a child's education, namely the teachers, but also, more importantly, the administrators performing the evaluations, the instructional facilitator, or the senior teacher of that district, to involve them in the process of improving other teachers, utilizing their expertise, and then finally, and probably more importantly yet, the parents themselves. And so this was a reaching out to involve all parties, not just the teachers. As I thought about this program and the problems that we currently have with possibly the 10-year subject and the hearing process, the due process that our teachers are guaranteed if they've achieved this 10-year title, and the cost involved in those hearings. And in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, if the evaluations were done properly, would there be a need for these hearings? Possibly. Would they be cut in half? Most likely. And let me explain, as I walk you through the bill, the idea behind this pilot program. Basically, we talk about in Section 1 on Page 1, the amount, the fiscal amount being asked to, again, take care of the equipment that the is going to be required to engage this process and enhance the teacher evaluation. Page 2 is basically talks about the pilot program and who would be involved. Line 7 on page 2, we talk about the state superintendent of public instruction selecting 4 qualified school districts. So the burden is on our superintendent of public instruction to select 4 school districts that would meet the qualifications. Then we spell out the qualifications, and the 4 schools that we're trying to involve is a good cross-section of the different sizes of schools that we have throughout our state, depending on the ADM or the average daily attendance that they have, starting with our small school districts, the 2A, the 3A, and the 4A type schools. And so we're trying to get a good cross-section of how this would work in each one of those districts, depending on the size and that was accounted for the number of equipment, cameras, recorders, things like that also. Now, to be a qualified school district, to have the superintendent of public instruction select a school, on page 3 we talk about some of the things that these school districts would have to have installed into their district. In Romanet I, on line 8, they must have an organized or an active parent organization with elected officers that meet at least once a month throughout the school year. So for 8 months, 9 months throughout the school year, this parent's organization would have to meet on a regular basis and have elected officers. And we'll see the importance of that later on in the bill. Line 12, submit a plan of action to the state superintendent, which shall include the following. On line 15, a schedule of teacher evaluations, which at a minimum would provide one evaluation per semester for each teacher in the district. Right now, as I understand it, it is required by our Department of Education that each teacher be evaluated once per year, annually. That's it. And I would submit, Mr. Chairman, that that's part of the problem of our present system. Line 20, a statement detailing the proposed evaluation process which will be implemented by the district. This evaluation process shall, at a minimum, comply with the requirements of subsection E of this section. We go on the next page, on page 4, another statement detailing the method the district will use to implement the results of the evaluations conducted under this pilot program. This pilot program, if the evaluations are done properly, you not only can use it to improve a teacher's performance by involving not only the principal, but also the instructional facilitator or the senior teacher, to put a timeline together for and goals to help this teacher improve if there are some concerns that we have found out because of the evaluations and the recording. So timelines and goals are set. Criteria is suggested, and the teacher is, you might say, put on the hook to make improvements and to work towards that. But all the while, getting help from the principal and the senior teacher. So now we're actually, instead of the train hitting the teacher at the end of the school year saying that their contract will not be renewed, now we're actually working with the teacher throughout the school year to make those improvements and address those concerns. And so this is getting back to that problem of the hearing process and he said, she said situations that we presently have and the expense. If a teacher knows throughout the year that they've been worked with and are being worked with and those goals are not being met, let's say perhaps the teacher's not applying themselves, they see the train coming down the track, and so now it's not a surprise at the end of the year. Will they still request a hearing? Maybe. But most likely, if that train is coming down the track these different parties have been involved from the start, now we have more than just the principal and their word against the instructor's word. And so hopefully this would take care of a lot of those hearings as the train approaches and the teacher is on the tracks. The importance of the cameras. As I talked to some of our administrators and asked them, if you want an interesting exercise, Mr. Chairman and fellow senators, go back to your school districts and ask your administrators how those evaluations are presently being performed. Your answers will be so varied, you won't believe it. In my particular Senate district, I have 4 separate school districts. And I would imagine that each administrator performs those evaluations in a different manner. Some annually. Some pull out the form, check it off, and call it good when they haven't even visited the class. Others visit the class on a regular basis, sometimes for 15 minutes, pop in unannounced. In this one particular district that I was talking to, they asked the instructor when it would be a good day for them to come in and attend their full class period. And so the teacher gets to choose the day and the hour, or the class period. Now, my flags were raised, and on my concerns, and I was thinking, what kind of evaluation is this that we're talking about? Does having a camera in the classroom preclude or prevent a principal in going beyond just the recording, the video, or the DVD? Certainly not. A principal, if he has a teacher or she has a teacher that they're concerned with, could still visit the classrooms unannounced or announced, whatever, and continue to work with that teacher. The reason for the cameras, of course, is the unannounced option that it would give. The recorder comes on Tuesday, second period, unannounced. Now I think we have a true picture of what might be happening in that classroom. Concerns in our education committee was, what if a principal is headhunting and records 10 different periods of a teacher and then selects the worst one? You know, those problems can be resolved. One thing I tried to do in this bill was leave local control intact as much as possible. And so the implementation of this process is still left open to the district, the principals, the superintendents, the school board, to implement this program to the best of their abilities and then get a report back and to see the successes or the failures. That's the intent of the pilot program. And so a problem such as that or suspicion such as that could be resolved by involving the senior teacher and the principal sitting down together and working out a schedule of when those recordings are going to happen. Pretty simple solution. Again, a checks and balances. Accountability to the principal to have the evaluations. Accountability to the principal to coordinate with the senior teacher. Now it's not just putting the burden of termination on the principal versus the teacher. Now we've got a whole team that has been working on improving that teacher's ability to actually teach. And fellow senators and chairman, this bill, as I put 4 years into it, and I know what you're thinking, this is the best that this good senator can do after 4 years. Senator Peterson, I didn't know you could read the body's mind, but anyway, keep going. I'm talented that way, Mr. Chairman. The answer is yes. Think about it. Think about local control as an issue. Think about the pilot program. Think about the framework. Think about leaving it open enough for the local administrators to take this and run with it, either fail with it or succeed with it, but to get the report back. So the camera is critical. A lot of heartburn, a lot of exaggeration and worry has been put into that camera in the classroom. Privacy issues have been raised. And I would submit, Mr. Chairman, that we have cameras on our buses, we have cameras in the hallways, we have locker checks, we have drug-sniffing dogs, we have policemen on campus. Those privacy issues have been run over already, and those issues are far, far gone. What we're trying to do here in this particular bill is get a true picture of what's happening in the classroom, a true evaluation, an effective evaluation, an evaluation that is efficient in a way that we can get to the heart of the concern and the problem. And so the camera's critical. Now, just a little bit before I sit down, Mr. Chairman, is the importance of the parents group. And concerns were raised. A lot of the emails that I've been receiving is how are parents qualified to evaluate? As I was talking about this idea, this concept of this pilot program to a retired principal, and I explained the concept to him, he listened patiently, and then after the conversation, or after my presentation, he said, "What gives you the right to evaluate one of my teachers as a parent?" And it took me back a little bit. I was somewhat surprised. I quickly responded, "That young man sitting on the front row that happens to be my son gives me every right to evaluate that teacher, and you as a principal, and the superintendent that we've hired, and the school board that we elected." Now, granted, there are parents out there that probably would feel very uncomfortable about viewing a tape and doing an evaluation. But I submit, Mr. Chairman, that there are parents in our communities, retired teachers, business leaders, business owners, that could most definitely qualify as an evaluator. Their form might be a little more simplified than maybe the senior teacher or the principal. The principal is looking for certain things. The senior teacher is looking for certain things. A parent could be looking for certain things. But the parent would be selected by the parents group. Walk in, view the tape, fill out his or her evaluation form, turn it over to the principal, and leave. That's the extent of the evaluation. Parents wouldn't be involved in confidential matters, employee matters. That's between the principal and the senior teacher or the superintendent and the school board. The last thing we're asking our parents to do, and this is where the accountability comes in to the principal, to have these evaluations, is that the parents would actually report to the school board, the president of the parents' organization, report to the school board once a month, and the report might say, we had 5 evaluations scheduled, 5 were performed, we have 5 more scheduled for next month, they're going well. That's the end of my report. This brings accountability to the principal to have those evaluations, to schedule them, to follow through with them, and to have them. And, you know, the parents could follow up with the principal and the senior teachers to see, you know, are we following up with corrective procedures? Or the last thing I will mention is that this evaluation process could be used both ways. It could be used to protect the teachers. It could be used to protect those teachers from those perhaps administrators that have it out for a certain teacher. If a teacher's been there long enough and the evaluation's proved to be successful and positive for that teacher, they've got a pretty good case that they're trying in the school district to become a better teacher. And they're successful in their trade. And so it could be a protection for those teachers as well. Mr. Chairman, fellow senators, that's basically the pilot program involving the 4 school districts in our state. I was thinking of maybe 8. Cut it down myself, thinking, oh, let's take some small steps here. But in this session, Mr. Chairman, as we talk about teacher accountability, we have to involve others. And that's been a majority of my emails, is involving others besides just the teachers. Administrators need to be accountable, most definitely. I agree wholeheartedly. From my discussions with school administrators and teachers, I found that out to be probably more true than anything. One retired teacher, one of my better teachers when I was going to high school years ago, was his comment caught me somewhat by surprise, too. He said, you know, that'd be a great thing. But he said, you know, it would be nice just to have the principals in the building. And that caught my eye, or that caught my attention. I thought, you know, and every administrator is different. We have great administrators, I'm sure. We have great teachers. But I know we've got some problems and concerns out there. I've had 3 of my own sons go through our school district, and there's been some great experiences, and there's been some miserable experiences. And to just put our heads in the sand and say, well, we've got some good teachers out there. Yes, we do. But we've got some poor ones, too. Poor ones in the fact that they could be better if they were worked with. Poor ones that maybe have been burned out or gotten comfortable. I've done that in my profession. I've gotten comfortable and somewhat burned out at times. We go through these waves of success and failure. But I would submit, Mr. Chairman, that this pilot program does more than just bring a heavy hand to teachers or administrators. It actually gets us involved as a community, as parents, as the instructional facilitator or senior teacher, whichever we prefer, and the principal, to actually work with these teachers and improve their ability to teach if there are some concerns there. We're addressing the problem. And so that's the idea of the pilot program, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask for the body's favorable consideration and stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. We're on the bill. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, we've heard a lot in this session, Mr. Chairman, about accountability for teachers and accountability for schools, and there's a lot of legislation that's going through, and there's a lot of things that we're hoping to do, and a lot of things do need to be done. But this is not one of the things that we need to do. This is not one of the areas that we need to move into to get teacher accountability. This certainly goes too far. What this bill is doing effectively is videotaping teachers on a random basis when they don't know, which to a lot of you, I'm sure, sounds fine. You know, they're working for the schools, they're working for us, they should be responsible for it. But that, if that's not really disturbing enough, the real key concern, as I see it, isn't necessarily just that you're videotaping the teachers, Mr. Chairman, it's that you're videotaping students that are not the child of the teacher that is going to be reviewing the tape. That is against the law. That's against federal law. The Family Educational and Privacy Rights Act of 1974 indicates that no person, no individual that is not working for the school is allowed to view the records of students that are not their own children unless they are hired by the school, unless there are specific exceptions to that. Now, this is a case where what we have in this bill is a requirement that a teacher who is representing some type of organization, teacher organization, for example, the Booster Club, where that individual is going to come in and have an opportunity to view your child, not their child, but everybody's child in the classroom environment, and basically have firsthand right to view the records of that child. Again, this is against federal law. An additional federal law called the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act indicates furthermore that it's also against federal law to view children with learning disabilities that may have individual education plans in place to see how those education plans are being implemented. So most of the classrooms in Wyoming probably have a child, if not more, with an IEP in place. When you're videotaping that and exposing that record to another parent who does not have the authority or the right to view that IEP, you are again violating a law. So as I said in committee when we were speaking on this bill, there needs to be a much larger appropriation, perhaps $10 or more million, because this bill is lawsuit ready. We need a big fund to defend against the privacy right invasions that are required for this bill to be implemented. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would strongly urge rejection of this particular bill and for the body to look to some of the other accountability measures that we have ahead. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Rothfuss. Further discussion, Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, while I won't address the federal issues, and that may be something we need to think about in that specific example, what I would like to share with the body is the years of working in public safety and seeing the transition from simply writing reports to running a patrol car and having video cameras and the outcome of that. And what that did, while it wasn't a selective, you know, we may turn it on, we may turn it off, they ran all the time whenever the lights were activated, recorded. But what that did, and frankly, cops were worried about that. But in time, what we found out and what I experienced was that people did a better job. They knew they were on tape. It put them on their best behavior. But the biggest benefit out of that for the law enforcement officers was it was a second witness to what they were doing. And that good work that was being done was recorded. And it really did become, I think, a tool that helped not only raise the performance, possibly, of the profession, but it gave the public an opportunity to witness what was going on and raise a sense of confidence amongst the public in what was happening out there. And so this idea, it may not be ready for prime time, and there may be some issues with it. I guess my suggestion is, if you're going to start running it, rather than gamble that you hit a good day or a bad day, and this might be a flaw with the proposal, is you probably, you know, to get a real picture that would benefit everybody, it might just be to run the tapes and have a way of recording them. And it's worked in the law enforcement example. I don't know how it could work or wouldn't work here and some issues, but I would be a little concerned with the hit or miss, and we ran it on a day when a child was having a bad day, a teacher was caught in the act of their less than best performance. And then how would we determine how many shots they got? Would it be, you know, the principal gets to look at 10 and then the teacher gets to select 10 of their choice? You know, going back and forth in defense. And so there's some challenges with it, and I just share that in the law enforcement example and the public safety example, a constant recording, and nobody sat down and watched the tapes all the time, but when there was an issue, they were on hand. And so there was some benefit in that setting.
Thanks, Senator Christensen. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, it's an intriguing concept, and I think we're all being challenged here to come up with innovative ways to improve our education. And so the test is this one of those innovations that's going to help improve education? And I'm not convinced that it is, and I guess I talk about some of the reasons why I'm not convinced. Let's begin with cameras. I guess the notion is that somehow if you're being photographed or something all day, that affects your performance one way or the other. I'll have to be honest with you. I'm not offended by having cameras there. They're in the hallways. You go into the mini mart, you're on the camera. I don't know if all you know right now, you're all being videotaped by that little black bulb up there. And, you know, frankly, I didn't know that until the majority floor leader and I were moving some artwork at night on the other side. And all I can tell you is the next year we moved the artwork, it wasn't us, it was somebody with these masks on. So I know about that. But I also got to tell you, I've watched you guys. You're all my colleagues. This is a fun group. And I really don't think any one of you at any given time thought, geez, I wonder if that camera makes a difference. Today, the microphone was on after we walked off. One of my colleagues came from out of the room and said, you know, we were standing by the microphone. There's live feed going through this, and we're just having a conversation about the last bill. I guess the caution there, I guess, is if you remember that these mics don't always get shut off and be on your best behavior at all times. But my point is people forget about that. And the concern I have is the bill is that I think what we're trying to do and trying to evaluate the programs we have is get an empirical way to demonstrate that teachers are doing a good job and growth is continuing. And the empirical test, and that's what we've been talking about, the empirical test, we're going to ultimately have to design a testing system that measures growth, and we're going to measure your outcome. How are you teaching? Are your students achieving? And it's not to be a popularity test in a sense. It is how your teacher's improving. And when I say popularity test, one of the things that I always remember and going through my children's evaluation or going around and doing the meeting with teachers, particularly in high school where you're going to different teachers and you're doing the parent-teacher nights. And on occasion, on those evenings, they would invite the parents to come with their children. And my children had some teachers that we thought were dynamite, sending them off to NASA, doing camps, just great. And frankly, we had some teachers that we thought weren't measuring up to the task. They simply weren't measuring up. They weren't challenging our children by our reckoning. Our children didn't interact that well with them. But here's something I observed that night. It's not just once, but multiple times. We would be with other families that are different than us. We would walk into the room that where my children, they love the teacher. Their faces would light up. The teacher's face would light up. And it was great. And then I'd sit down. I noticed that off on the right, there is a couple families there that I didn't know. Their kids are over there. Their heads are down. Their shoulders are down. They obviously were not comfortable with that teacher. And then we go to the class where my kids walk in and their shoulders drop and they're sitting there like, yeah, this is the teacher. That same family came in. Their kids lit up. They're hugging the teacher. They're communicating with the teacher in a way that I thought, you know, what it tells you is not every teacher is going to win the popularity test with every student. And at the end of the day, what I wanted to know is, fair enough, so my kids interact better with some teachers than others. That's fine. I just want to make sure that those teachers teach my children well. So you go to this plan, among other things, you have a parent, and it's not the same parent for every teacher. So a different parent gets on there, so you say, you know, I just don't like that parent, that teacher, so I'm going to get on the committee to go in and rate the teacher that I don't like. And frankly, there are some parents out there whose judgment I wouldn't care. I simply wouldn't care about their judgment. And if they happen to not like that teacher that I thought, and I can tell you the teacher that I thought was one of the best, there were parents out to get him. As far as I'm concerned, this guy, ultimately ended up teaching at the university. Fantastic professor, but I can tell you there are parents that didn't like him and would have liked to see him go. And if you're going to have a parent, then you need to train them. They have to learn these things, how to evaluate them. You need to put them out into an environment where they're being uniform with every teacher. So we have to have uniformity. We have to develop standards by which we can judge performance. Because while we don't expect teachers to get along the same with every student, and we understand that they will interact different, they will tend to like people like themselves more, we do expect them to get achievement out of these students, because that's our, and we need to make sure they have the skills to get all students to learn. And we can achieve that. There is accountability mechanisms to do it. The difficulty that I have with this bill is, instead of going towards criteria that we can recognize and measure and look at growth performance and the actual performance of students throughout the year, we're going to an entirely subjective extent. How did I feel when I saw that teacher for that 1 hour? As my colleague from Teton County said, maybe they were on a down moment. Maybe they had the best performing class in the year on that moment that they weren't doing well. Or maybe you just don't like the way they shake their hands or whatever. Maybe you want teachers to be huggers. Maybe you don't like teachers that are huggers, whatever it is. And at the end of the day, I think what we're interested in is performance, measurable performance. We don't want this subjective stuff going on. And this is so subjective, and it tends to be how do you feel. And I, with my colleagues, the sponsor of the bill, I agree that parents have a role in this. I don't want to take the parents' role out of that. But I think the parents' role is to demand performance, to demand achievement, demand that our kids are getting taught well. It's not necessarily to go in and watch and choose or which teachers, because I can quite be certain that all of us here would choose probably different teachers than if you had a lineup of 20. And we wouldn't all agree who's the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, we've got a problem with our school. It's a national problem. Our schools are not performing to the extent they need to make us competitive internationally. And we've got a problem with our schools here in Wyoming. We are funding them such as we ought to have the best public schools in these United States. And the best we can tell from the objective evaluation data that we do get, particularly the NAEP tests, we're somewhere in the top half, but we're nowhere near the best in the country. We are not getting our money's worth out of our schools. We need to do some things differently, Mr. Chairman. Because just continuing to do what we are doing is not producing satisfactory results. Okay, we have here a proposed pilot project. Frankly, I think it's a pretty innovative proposal. I think probably the federal issues can be dealt with. You may have to have competent advice from the Attorney General as to just exactly how you do it, what we can do and what we can't. But we're the state of Wyoming, and we do control our own schools in the relative state-federal roles. That's our job. And so we ought to do it as best we can. I suspect because it's a pilot project, it won't be perfect the first time we try it. We'll learn some things, how you can do it better, and we'll have to make some adjustments. I have a suspicion, for instance, that at least once in a semester, No, that's not going to be good enough. You need to do it several times because teachers, being human, will have good days and bad days. I also suspect, Mr. Chairman, that with this out there, some school district will be innovative and say, you know, we ought to use these tapes. Maybe we ought to have a peer review process, much the way the healthcare professions do. Show a clip of the tape to a bunch of the teacher and a bunch of the teacher's peers, and say, okay, let's talk about how we could have handled this situation a little different. That's the way the health professions do it, and it makes them better. It's an attempt at self-improvement. And, Mr. Chairman, we talk a lot about bad teachers. We talk a lot about great teachers. But, Mr. Chairman, teachers are human, and most of them are going to be in the great middle. They do a pretty good job, but they could do a better job. And this may be a tool to help them do a better job. In the years I've been down here, Mr. Chairman, one of the rules I've developed is when we know we've got a problem, and a member of the legislature comes up with a creative solution that may work, may help solve it, make some sense, I've learned that that's something I want to support, because that's how we move forward. And so I would urge the Senate to adopt this bill and to adopt other bills that come forward to change the system, to try to improve it. Not everything we do will work. But we know if we don't do some different things, Mr. Chairman, the results are not going to be better than what they are right now.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few things in trying to answer some of the questions and concerns. The confidentiality issue I've given much thought to. And again, keep our eye on the ball. The parent's role is basically to view the recording, period, and report to the school board that the evaluations are happening. They don't have anything to do with sitting down with the principal and saying, how dare that teacher, you know, do this to this class or to evaluate in any way. Take away the form from the parent. Let the district and the principal come up with a guideline so the parents, all they are there to do is observe. So I don't know where the confidentiality or federal laws are being broken. We're not asking parents to go in and check files of students. And I'm kind of confused. In most of my emails from my school district, they're inviting me, as you can well imagine, to their classes, to their classrooms, and they say our doors are always open to parents. So what federal laws are we breaking by going into a public school, sitting down in my little Johnny's class to observe the teacher teaching my student? I can't observe other students. I've got to have a private class with that teacher and my student. So I'm kind of confused about that. Files are confidential. That's between the principal, the superintendent, and the school board. Yes, I agree. But read the bill. Doesn't say anything about parents looking into files, breaking federal laws. All we're trying to do is make the principals accountable to have the evaluations, to use the evaluations, to work with the teachers, to improve the teachers. I would much prefer keeping a teacher that might be a slightly burned out, working with them, holding their nose to, you might say, to the grindstone, getting them enthused again, and making them a better teacher, and keeping them employed in the district rather than have to go through a hiring process and spending $20,000 to terminate a teacher. I mean, we want to keep our teachers. We want them to be the best teachers. This process, this evaluation process, as it's entitled, enhancing the evaluation process. That's what it's all about. It might be innovative. It might be scary. It's something new. The camera, as far as I can tell, it's overreaction from a lot of the people saying, we don't want cameras on all the time. Read the bill. They're not going to be on all the time. Once per semester, pick the hour, pick the period, pick the day. Is it the only tool to be used in the evaluation process? I hope not. I hope not. The principal and the teacher, the instructor, the instructor facilitator, or the senior teacher needs to work with that teacher to improve the concerns, to address the concerns. Not to have the evaluation and at the end of the school year say, by the way, your contract's not going to be renewed. That's what we got right now. That's not a system. That's that's why we have the hearings, the tenure concerns, all those problems. This bill, as far as this senator is concerned, hits the target dead center. Involving parents. How do you involve parents? Well, I invite them to my classroom. I work for a living. I can't take time out of my work day and get off of work to go sit down in a class. Besides, my son would probably shrink into his chair and be so embarrassed. So, to involve a parent, we have the recordings after hours. We review the tape after hours. The parents group meets after hours. The important part of this bill is not just the camera and the honest evaluation that we'll give. Adding another tool to the principal's tool chest to improve teachers, to work with teachers, making them accountable, but also involving the parents. Can you imagine a parents group meeting after hours, not to talk about decorating buses or raising funds for new uniforms like booster clubs do? Let's separate the parent-teachers conference or the parent-teachers association, the PTAs, from the booster clubs. There's a difference. And I would submit, Mr. Chairman, that that's about all we have in our state right now as far as parent involvement. In a lot of cases, besides the parent-teachers conferences, is booster clubs. And that's the parents' involvement. And we can do better than that. Parents want to do better than that. If you give them the opportunity, I promise you that you'll have parents showing up to those parent meetings, and there'll be the type of parents that will be the business leaders, that will be the soccer moms, that will be the parents that we consider to be the silent majority. You might have some right-wing and left-wing parents, some wing nuts out there, but what you'll get at those evening meetings are parents that are finally given the opportunity to sit and discuss about how to improve a parent's assisting with homework. What are you doing in your home that's working? Making suggestions. Are the teachers precluded to attend this meeting? Certainly not. Love to have them there. How about the superintendent, school board members, principal? You bet. Have them there. But one of the first things I would do if I were in that parents group would get a petition signed to ask the superintendent of public instruction to please leave our teachers alone during the school year with conferences, self-improvement seminars. And during the school year, teachers need to be in the classroom. I've likened this example. It's like an auto factory makes cars. And while the assembly line is going, we take our assembly line workers off the assembly line and go to an improvement class, a motivational class. You can imagine what kind of car is going to be produced. And so while school's in session during those 9 months, those teachers need to be in the classroom. That would be the first thing I would do as a parents group. Sign a petition begging the superintendent of public instruction to stay with them, please leave our teachers alone during the school year. Now, what's wrong with that? We need that input from the parents. This bill provides the vehicle to do that. I'd ask for your support on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask the sponsor. I'm looking on page 4, starting on line 19, where it talks about a process which includes evaluation of each recording class by the principal, teacher being evaluated, an instructional facilitator or teacher with 10 years' experience, and a parent of the school's parent organization as part of the evaluation. Each person evaluating a recorded class should complete an evaluation review, and then it goes on to say, and they are the ones that help determine performance pay increase. Now, that's a little bit different than what I thought I heard, which was, gee, the parent just makes sure it's happening. This is the parent coming into the classroom, looking at that evaluation, the recorded evaluation, and that leads to setting the pay for every teacher in that district, whether they get that bonus. That's considerably more, I think. Now, maybe I misread it. I'd like to hear from the sponsor exactly what that paragraph means.
Thank you. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would contend, Mr. Chairman, that it actually goes further than that, because if you look at page 4, the first 6 lines, it indicates that this evaluation, upon being failed three consecutive times, will lead to the dismissal of the teacher, the termination of the teacher. So, in fact, these evaluations, after three consecutive failed evaluations by the teacher, and this is three random data points, Mr. Chairman, that we see over the span of a few years, is sufficient to terminate the teacher. And again, three random hours of time where a parent has say in the termination, just one parent each time, in whether the teacher gets to keep their job or not. And, Mr. Chairman, I would go on to say, in fact, that when the superintendent, I believe it was a superintendent, it might have been a principal that my colleague from Bighorn County was speaking with, said, what gives you the right to judge the teacher? Well, there is this natural instinct to think that as a parent, I get to judge whether a teacher is any good or not. And I do have the ability to judge whether or not a teacher is doing a good job with respect to my child. But that's the end of my rights. And I'm not an expert. I don't know enough about pedagogy to determine whether or not the first or second grade teacher is doing the right things or wrong things when it comes to teaching my child, because in fact I have not been trained in that. Sure, if we're teaching chemical engineering or physics courses, I can probably make some comments. But I don't know a lot about pedagogy, and I can't be qualified to evaluate or determine that. So while we heard some testimony that indicates that maybe the teacher's not going to have an active role, the bill as specified certainly implies an active role. With regard to some of the other comments we heard in testimony just now or in debate, there's some curiosity from my colleague from Bighorn County how this videotaping would actually be a violation of FERPA if you're allowed to go into the class. Well, case law indicates that when you record both video and sound, which I'm assuming there would be sound, actually that's not explicit, but that's an assumption I'm making. When you include both of those things, then you are establishing a record. That record is equivalent to any other bit of student record. You know that Timmy got an A in mathematics that day, that's part of the record, but so is this videotaping and audio taping of the child. As such, it falls under FERPA. Now, my colleague from Natrona County seems to suggest that we as the state of Wyoming can once again find a way around federal regulations. And I know that we all like to find ways around federal regulations, but every once in a while, there's a reason for a federal regulation, and in this instance, it's to protect the privacy rights of individuals and students. This is not one I want to circumvent. I don't want a clever solution to figure out how other parents can watch my children when I don't want them to. I want my rights as the parent to be respected by this bill. I want to be able to say no. I don't want Betsy from the Booster Club watching my child on a weekend. I just don't. I don't feel that that's a persuasive evaluation, that actually lends anything. But I recognize that the spirit of this bill, which is to try and get parental involvement in the learning process, Mr. Chairman, is valuable. I don't deny that. And I want to see ways and approaches that we can further that. But I don't want to see a subjugation of the individual rights of our children and our teachers to accomplish that objective, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Roethlis. Can you spell pedagogy?
Which one, subjugation?
No, pedagogy.
Pedagogy.
No, thank you. I'm impressed. Thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you know, there's part of me that thinks that having the cameras in the classroom, if they were lawfully done, wouldn't be a bad idea, just because I am kind of interested in how the other students react and how my children are acting. And I do want to stay away from that part of the discussion, because the cameras, I really, it may be that it's unlawful, maybe it shouldn't be done, but I know that as a parent, if you want to put your child in daycare now, there's opportunity to watch your child on a over the internet, just to check on them during the day. And it seems to me that it's pretty benign to simply watch conduct. I mean, I don't agree that people ought to be able to see records. That's a different issue. But I still think that even if you get over that hurdle, you have to decide more fundamentally what what it is that we need to do to get this empirical evidence that we can actually judge teachers and their whether they're getting achievement. And I think there's a real danger as we go about this task that we misdirect our efforts. And let's a couple things I think that I would challenge. I would challenge that kids in the United States who study hard and go to school are not can't go nose to nose with kids around the world. Well, my colleague from Casper challenges that our system is failing. All I can say is I did attend school in high school in Japan. My children happen to be have Chinese cousins. We get to go over to China. We get to see what their education is. And my children have worked in India. They've worked around the world. And I can tell you that I look at my kids. I look at their friends. I look at some of the some marvelous kids that come out of the Laramie schools doing things that are so extraordinary now, things that I couldn't do. I have kids that could actually talk to Senator Rothfuss about chemical engineering, which I wouldn't even can't even conceive of. But the there's a great number of students out there that are doing extraordinarily well. And at the same time, I am struck when my wife, who's a teacher, comes down and talks about the number of emotionally disturbed children, the number of and that having to have a padded room in your school just to harness a child. Did any of us have any of those experiences when we grew up? The number of parents that are trying to raise children on their own, and all the population is different. There is an extraordinary thing that's happening out there that is different than when we grew up. And I don't know whether it's environmental. I don't know whether it's alcohol related. I don't know whether it's drug related. I have some opinions, but I can tell you if you go into the school, it's a different population. And you have to be careful when you say that educators are doing a poor job, because I will challenge you. You sit down and meet some of these marvelous kids, people, the young guys that end up being like the chemical engineer that we have here. I mean, there are some really bright people out there. You know, I have a son who graduated PhD from Colorado School of Mines, and I go meet some of those kids, and I'm just knocked off my shoes. I just can't believe what they do and what they know. When we talk about parental involvement, I would challenge you to this, to think about this, is what is parental involvement? There's a danger in saying parental involvement is coming down and criticizing and evaluating your teachers. Here's what I think parental involvement is. I think the statistics are something like, if you go to school 7 hours a day and you sleep 8 hours a day, that you're actually with that teacher about 21% of the time. And that means the rest of the time you're with your parents. I think parental involvement is taking your kids home at night and make sure they do their homework. Not watching the videos of the teachers, but making sure your children's doing their homework on every night of the week, doing their homework on Sunday, challenging them to do it on Saturday. That's parental involvement. If we're going to measure and get parents involved, let's get the parents doing what they're supposed to be doing. Parental involvement is you know, if you find out that your student, your son or daughter, is not doing well in the class, you say you're going to have to study harder. You're going to have to bring your homework home, and you're going to have to take a look at it. So the danger is that if we do accountability, that we don't get sidetracked and go down one of the rails that takes you left when we got to focus on what's accountability. It's performance. It's measurable performance. And I challenge you to find anything in this bill that talks about any measurements, anything that you can measure, anything that you can see, and anything that you can distinguish. If it's there, let's implement it. If it's subjective, then let's not take that road.
We're away from the question yet, I think. Let's go, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In committee, we had a lot of discussion, or a fair amount of discussion, on the confidentiality about I don't want my kid, you know, being viewed by somebody else. And there was ideas kicked out about confidentiality agreements and all this kind of stuff. I also let the sponsor know that I was an affirmative vote in committee, but that might be the last one he sees. The senator from the Big Mountain area brought up the idea of the law enforcement cameras on the cars. That made me, I've sat here and thought about that since he brought that up. And those law enforcement cameras give us some of the best YouTube videos there are.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friend, and late in the day, try to keep our work on track. And I applaud him for his efforts in explaining his bill and his concept. And quite frankly, that's what it is. It's a concept. But folks, words mean something. And when we not what we're here for, we're here to write laws. And we're here to write laws that average person out on the street would understand. Because ignorance of the law is not an excuse, right? And when I'm here to, when I read the bill, you know, there's some novel ideas here. But when I read, just look at the state superintendent, and the state superintendent's going to select 4 school districts. What criteria? There's none in here. What are the 4, what school districts does elect? How do we know that $210,000 is the accurate amount? If he selects school district number 1 as one of the larger school districts, well, we probably have a lot more schools. Are the cameras in the gymnasium? Are the cameras in the PE classes? When we talk about parent-teacher organization, ACTIVE, is that community-wide parent-teacher organization, or is it just for the school? Because I will tell you that there are schools where you have very active parent-teacher organizations, and you have schools that probably don't even have an active parent-teacher organization. Where are the criteria, as the good senator from Albany County talked about, in terms of the measurement performance? You know, how do you know who's performing good, or what is those bases for that? If you take a Title I school, where the only time they may get a meal is in that school, and they film them on a Monday when they haven't had anything to eat over the weekend, what kind of objective criteria is it for that? The idea is good in terms of trying to accomplish what we all feel is a frustration. You know, I came down here in 1995 when I was selected and went full bull to the Campbell decision, and we've been dealing with it ever since that time. And every time that we do try to do something in the area of education, quite frankly, we're all frustrated. I'm frustrated to do something here in this session. We'll have our opportunity to do that. I suggest to you that perhaps this isn't the vehicle to do that. But we will do something this session, because I know we all feel the that I felt now for quite some time.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I want to respond to one statement that was made, an allegation that there was we're looking at poor teacher. Mr. Chairman, I don't think we're looking at poor teacher performance as much. I think basically our teachers do a pretty good job. For many students, the education is pretty good. The allegation is the system is not performing as well as it should. So it's the whole system, the teachers, the students, the administrators, the parents, the whole works. And we need to try some different things
so that we have a system that performs better. And I think this bill is one of the many potential steps we need to explore as we try to get a system that works better. Mr. Chairman, I urge adoption of the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Apparently not. Not yet. Senator Barnard.
I rise to speak in opposition to this bill. I, like the good senator from Cheyenne, think there are some really good things in this bill, and I applaud the senator from Park County for bringing this up. If you turn to page 4, line 15, it says, using built-in classroom cameras to record at least one. It doesn't say just one. It says at least one. There could be 100 there. And so I question that. I've had a lot of feedback on from the teachers in Evanston. I don't think I've had one teacher that wants this bill. I'd ask you, if we're going to put cameras in the classroom, there's just a bunch of logistical questions that are going to come up here. What happens if a camera gets turned on and the teacher's filmed illegally? Who's going to be responsible for that? What happens when Senator Roth has said, we get these suits? There's just so many things here. If this passes and if this works out as a trial thing, then the next question is, how many classrooms are going to have cameras in them? How much cost is that going to be? We all know technology evolves. How long are these cameras going to be changed out every 5 years? Are we going to create a new camera technician in every single school to take care of these cameras? Those kind of questions perturb me a lot. I'm absolutely convinced that having a parent do an evaluation of a teacher is a road we don't want to go down. All that's going to happen is have one teacher have a person come up and say, oh, I heard somebody say you did a really good evaluation, and there's going to be a lawsuit. I just firmly think the teachers are not trained in evaluation. I don't think that's – I mean, the parents aren't trained in evaluation, and I don't think they should be evaluating teachers. There was once a beautiful lady, and she was given a box. Her name was Pandora. She opened up, and all kinds of things came out. I think this is the same kind of bill.
Thank you, Senator Barnard. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the last time, and please hold the applause. I knew this would be a good discussion. Mr. Chairman. And I think we're all interested in improving our education. This was just a simple little attempt of getting everybody involved on the same page. Parents, teachers, principals, instructional facilitators. Just to answer some of the questions. All I'd ask is read the bill. There shouldn't be any confusion to the fact that we're not having parents evaluate teachers. If you read on page 4, bottom of 4, and the top of page 5, that parent can fill out a form designed by the school district, approved by the superintendent of public instruction as they apply for this program or are assigned to this program. So the superintendent gets a whack at it to review the district's plan, how they're going to implement it. What kind of form is that parent going to be given to fill out? Was the teacher dressed appropriately? Period. One sentence, yes. Okay, you're excused now. They don't have anything to do with talking about problems in the classroom, how we're going to work with that teacher. Parents are not going to be involved with those type of confidential employee issues. They just won't. And any school principal or superintendent or teacher or legislator would understand why. And so let's don't make things into this that are not there. Let's don't create the ghosts. That's most of my emails have been addressed to over-exaggeration of what we're trying to accomplish here. The reason it's open-ended, this bill, is to let the districts control, make the decisions themselves. I trust that they're smart enough to implement a program such as this. I really do. They'll watch the confidentiality. They'll involve the parents as far as they want to involve the parents. Some of the other questions I was trying to write down as we were going along here. I just don't understand the disconnect here in the committee, in the education committee, the problem of using the instructional facilitator along with the principal to evaluate. We don't want that to happen. I asked why not. Well, because they're the liaison between the teacher and the principal. Yeah, okay, good. Can we use them? If they're your best teacher in the district, shouldn't they be involved in helping the teachers become better teachers? Fine, if that's a problem, if it's justified, use another senior teacher that's a good, qualified teacher to help. Again, the principle is, let's involve more than just the principals in termination, in evaluation, in laying out a game plan of improving a teacher. Let's get that teacher rep involved. Let's get that senior teacher involved in helping that teacher. Now it's not the principal's word against the teachers in the hearing process. $20,000 later, we're spending education dollars that way. There's got to be a better way, folks. And if you can think of how to bring accountability to the principal, that's the only role the parents are doing. That's the only role the parents have in this. They're there to make sure that that evaluation is taking place. They can't do it during the day because they work. They can't hold the hand of the principal and go in and make sure the principal's going in during the school period. They've got to do it after hours. That's the reason for the camera. That's it. And I would just final comment, Mr. Chairman, if there's a lot of opposition to this bill from the teachers, that ought to wake some of us up. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it is for the favorable consideration of Senate File 114, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That committee has, that bill has passed committee of the whole. Division. all those who voted in favor of the bill, please rise. Those opposed, please rise. Pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed standing, division, vote, or roll call vote is required. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Martin,
no.
Meyer, excused, Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
aye.
Bonflatern,
no.
President Anderson,
no.
Closing vote, closing vote closed. 6 ayes, 23 noes, and 1 excused.
Senate File 114, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed definitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk. Ms. Majority Floor Leader, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole report.
Rise and report. Heard the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes.
Message from the House. Oh, I'm sorry. The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate Joint Resolution 7, due pass amendment. Senate File 104, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 113, due pass amended. Senate File 118, due pass amended. Senate File 131, due pass. Senate File 135, due pass amended. Senate File 147, due pass. And Senate File 114, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move for adoption of the committee whole report.
Heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. That motion carried. The report has been adopted. Now we will hear some messages from the House.
February the 2nd, 2011. From the House of Representatives, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 131, tip sharing. Ayes 27, noes 31, excuse 2. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. House Bill 187, administrative subpoenas. Ayes 22, noes 37, excused 1. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. House Bill 22, phased-in fuel tax increase. Ayes 13, noes 47. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 2nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 125, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Peterson, Von Flatern. No, Senators Meyer and Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 1st, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 144, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 3rd.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet Thursday night upon adjournment, and we're going to handle House Bill 74, Engross, Vidalia Marriages, House Bill 61, Ominous Water Bill Planning, and House Bill 152, Very Rare and Uncommon Area Designations.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet Friday, February 4th, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S18 to consider the following bills. House Bill 110, Engross, Successor Corporation, Asbestos-Related Liability Act 2, House Bill 112, Engross, Mining Permits, and the continuation of House Bill 108, Engross, Collection Agencies.
Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, February 3rd, 15 minutes after noon recess in room S16 to take up House Bill 143, Engross, Manufacturing Tax Exemption, House Bill 138, Public Fund, Time Deposit, Open Account Interest Rate, and House Joint Resolution number 2, Engross, Resolution U.S. Constitution requiring a balanced budget.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to apologize to the members that have these last 3 files up in advance because you may have a late evening. The Senate Joint Appropriations Committee, Mr. President, is going to meet as soon as the House is adjourned to finish up the budget so that we can get it. So that's the, and in order to do that, we have three files left, and we're going to hear them tonight. But we may have to, well, if the House is still going on, we'll go straight to Senate Appropriations Committee. If the House is, when the House is ready, then we'll depart and go down and meet with the House on the Joint Appropriations Committee, so people may have to cool their jets. But we are going to finish all of our work tonight, including the work on these three files, Senate File 139, Healthcare Pilot Project Amendments, Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design, and Senate File 143, Federal Natural Resource Policy. We know that there's a dinner this evening with the that's always a enlightening dinner, but we have to get through the work. And I apologize in advance. Now, last thing, Mr. President, if there are any Senate files out there that were referred to us and they got lost, you better talk to me, because we think these are the last three files, and at, when we complete this, all of our files have been reported back. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Perkins.
President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary will meet Friday, February the 4th at 8 a.m. in Room S1 to consider the following bills: House Bill 62, Wyoming Controlled Substances Act Amendments, and House Bill 29, DUI Elimination of Right to Refuse Test.
Thank you. Other announcements? Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President. Representative Mary Throne has asked me to announce that for some reason or another she's not getting through to some members of the Senate in regard to those legislative mugs. So if you want one or more, whatever, make sure you get hold of her, preferably via email by the close of business Friday. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February the 3rd. We are adjourned.